Welcome to Real Money Radio, the show that focuses on real people, real problems, and real solutions. Here's your host, certified financial planner, David Holland.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. We cover a lot of things on the show, but we never forget to pay attention to what's happening in the markets, and it's a lot. And we now have the luxury of our rearview mirror. We can look back on 2014 for the year that it was and talk about that, and also, you know, understand a little bit better about some of what's been happening in the markets. And there's a lot we can cover, but we've got an expert on the line with us that we've brought back. He's a prior guest and did a great job, and love having him back. He is a senior columnist for Investment News, and he goes by the name Jeff Benjamin. Welcome, Jeff. Good to have you on.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
And that's at least your stage name, right?
Yeah, I think it's the only name I have.
All right.
I'll take it.
You'll take it. Well, it is all about the Benjamins. You know that, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, good. All right. Well, listen, speaking of Benjamins, you know, there's actually a couple of articles that you wrote recently for Investment News. Of course, investmentnews.com, ladies and gentlemen, great resource, a required reading in my office. A couple of great articles I saw you wrote, Jeff, and I wanted to get to them and get your thoughts. And I want to start with the... which is a really interesting take, and I know that it's a top of mind for a lot of advisors and for a lot of clients, is the S&P 500. And I love the title, when underperforming the S&P 500 is a good thing. So let's get into that, because, you know, it's everybody, of course, is well aware of a couple of these major market indices that we all can look at as kind of mileposts or measuring sticks. And the argument, of course, is that, hey, look, I don't need an advisor. I can just put all my money into the S&P 500 index, and hey, I would have made X percent last year. What say you? Why maybe isn't that the best strategy? And then why would, you know, maybe not performing as well as the market, like the S&P 500, be a good thing?
Well, yeah, obviously, if you looked at the performance of the S&P last year, it was up 13.7%. It is a benchmark that everybody looks at. It's the one that, you know, they talk about on the nightly news, and, you know, that along with the Dow Jones Industrial Average. But what I think a lot of financial advisors have a hard time or struggle with their clients, getting them to understand that they're not just invested in the S&P 500. And if they were invested in only the S&P 500 last year, yeah, they would have gotten 13.7%. But you'd have to ask, why would anybody put all of their money into one thing like that? And as I point out in the article, is that a truly diversified portfolio, even an aggressively diversified portfolio, according to, you know, some analysis I ran based on Morningstar screens, would have returned about 5.2% last year.
Okay.
And that's with a 91% allocation to U.S. and international stocks.
That's pretty aggressive.
Yeah, that's aggressive, and you would have gotten 5.2%. So when somebody looks at the S&P 500, they say, hey, wait, the S&P 500 did almost 14% last year. My portfolio did 5.2%. And advisors, they struggle with that with clients. Advisors understand it, but a lot of clients say, you know, I don't understand why I have to have all this other stuff here. Why do I even need
it? Yeah, exactly. Exactly, and that's a hard argument, I think, or at least a little, not a hard argument, but a little bit takes a little bit of explaining to do, because you're right, Jeff, that the client or the investor might say, yeah, well, whatever, you know, I could have been in the S&P 500 and I would have made that return.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I think that I have to, I don't mind picking on the media a little bit. I think they have a hand in this, because, you know, they have 24/7 to fill. And you know, we have a 46-inch flat-screen TV in our wall, and it sits on the wall in our chief investment officer's office. And, you know, when I gave it to him, he thought it was really cool. After the first couple of days, he didn't think it was so cool anymore. because the news outlets, they've got to fill all that time, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so they constantly are talking about how much the market is plunging by being off 30 points.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I think they have a hand in this, because they constantly talk about, you know, these stock market indices and how they've performed. And I think you're onto something. People have gotten maybe a bit of a distorted view. The S&P 500, you know, being an index of 500 of the larger U.S.-based corporations publicly traded, it's just one thing.
Right.
It's just one area of the market, right?
Right. And A couple of the advisors I talked to, they said, if you look at what's in the S&P 500, it really is, it's not the largest, but it's comprised of large cap stocks, really
representative.
Big companies. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I know all advisors are going to do things differently, but they said if you broke down most investors' diversified portfolios, those large cap stocks are only going to represent about 15% of their portfolio. That's why you can't look at something like the performance of the S&P in 1 year and peg yourself against it. But what was also unique about last year is that usually when you see something like when the S&P does okay like that, you'll see, you know, there'll be some international indexes that did well. Some of the mid-cap U.S. and small-cap U.S. indexes will also have done well. But last year was so unique because the S&P 500 was a literal outlier with everything else out there. It essentially just almost lapped the field. If a diversified portfolio just couldn't keep up with the S&P 500. I mean, I think the MSCI EAFE, that's large international, developed country stocks, that fell by almost 5% last year. Emerging market stocks fell by 2.2% last year. Mid-cap gained 13.2 last year, which was almost keeping up with the S&P 500. But small-cap domestic stocks last year gained about 5%. So it was really the S&P was kind of the only game in town. And, yeah, if you had a crystal ball, you could have said on January 1st of 2014, I'm just going to put all my money in this and I'll be happy. But obviously that's a fantasy. You basically invest for, risk-adjusted returns. And, you realize that, I mean, anybody that's been in the market for longer than a few years remembers the 37% decline by the S&P in 2008. That was the year I bet no clients were saying, why don't you have all my money in the S&P 500, right?
Right. Of course not, right? I know.
Right.
Hey, that's what I'm paying you for. Don't put me all in the one that's losing. What are you doing?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Right.
Well, and it's interesting, though. I wanted to, kind of twist it a little bit, Jeff, and I think I always, part of my, in addition to investment news, the other required reading for me is the Wall Street Journal, and I always have to turn, every morning, I turn to the money section, and I look at where the stock market indexes or indices are, not only for the day, but for year-to-date, and for, whatever period of time I want to review. And now I'll play devil's advocate here to the kind of this bigger question we're talking about, and that is, well, nobody also doesn't ask you, or ask advisors, hey, I see that China, the Shanghai index was the highest performing index of the world, up whatever it was, I don't remember the number now, but it was two or three times the S&P 500. Nobody asked me that. Nobody asked me, David, why didn't you have me all in the Chinese index?
Investors in China might be saying that.
Well, and that's the point, isn't it? It's because
right.
of this constant drumbeat mm-hmm. that is banged on every single day that, S&P are down. And we at least got people weaned off of just looking at the Dow.
Right.
Now they at least look at the S&P and they also look at the NASDAQ. But, it's just one, because if we've got a diversified portfolio, doggone it, we're going to have mm-hmm. some China, some Japan, some Australia, some Europe, even some of the beaten up countries over there. I mean, we're going to have those things, mm-hmm. right?
I mean, you have to. If an advisor has investors who don't really understand the basics of diversification, which is not unreasonable to assume, that's part of the advisor's job, too, to kind of help them understand it and see the whole thing and see how things are supposed to move in, opposite directions sometimes. You want diversification in a portfolio. But, the benchmark issue is a long one. And if an advisor is going to put together a client portfolio and at the end of the year saying, this is what your portfolio did, most advisors are not going to say, and this is what the S&P 500 did. They're going to say, this is what a comparable index of what we're trying to do with your portfolio, like maybe the 60% S&P and 40% bonds, which even that might be an oversimplification, but it shows investors that you're not just going up against the S&P 500. I mean, yeah, the S&P 500 can be a can be a happy little simple indicator of what's going on in one part of the stock market on a given day.
Mm.
But it's especially with so much information out there now.
Right, exactly.
Most people can go on their 401k plans and see, you know, and there's ways to look at your personal performance over various periods, and it shows you that, well, you know, you don't have to say, well, this is what the S&P did, or I have to measure what each individual mutual fund in my portfolio did. You know, it'll show you there's so many different ways to slice and dice and measure performance, but, you know, the S&P is always going to be out there that way, and the Dow is always going to be out there that way. I don't know if there's a way to get around it or if there's even a need to get around it.
No, I think as long as people recognize it for what it is.
Right.
Yeah.
It's like looking at Apple's performance in one day or something like that. You know, you can't sit there and say, well, why aren't I doing as well as that?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Because you're invested in more than just that.
Exactly. Well, there you go. I mean, that's really the heart of it. Jeff Benjamin, ladies and gentlemen, senior columnist, Investment News, investmentnews.com. Good stuff there. We'll grab a quick break, and we will come back and talk to Jeff about another article he wrote recently, and I think you'll find it interesting, so stay right there.
When it comes to finding an advisor you can trust, are you unsure of the questions to ask? David Holland has written a book that can help, and it's called How to Get Great Advice and Avoid Scams. David has crammed his experience and insider knowledge about advisors and how they operate into this popular book. Visit Amazon.com to order your copy today. Or if you'd like to meet one-on-one with David to discuss your financial goals and concerns, he'll give you a free copy of his book when you meet. There's no cost or obligation. The number to call for your appointment with David is 671-PLAN or visit planstronger.com.
And we're back. Jeff Benjamin on the line, senior columnist, Investment News, investmentnews.com. So let's go over here, and I want to hit the other article that you wrote, Jeff, which was very interesting, and you and I will make a promise to not get too overly technical here, but it's really interesting. Another concept in the investment world is this thing called beta, and there's a new kind of evolution here of what's called smart beta, and so it's a little more technical, but you're saying it's becoming much more popular as an approach. And despite the fact that people don't really like the name for it. So give us a little background on this, and sure, then we can kind of dissect it for our listeners.
Sure. And yeah, it is easy to get deep in the weeds with this, and we don't need to for this conversation. The concept of beta is just really a market term an investing term for the market. What the market does is the beta. That's the, you want to, you, an alpha is doing better than the market, doing, you know, outperforming. If you're indexed, we just talked about indexes, but if you're running a mutual fund that is benchmarked against the S&P 500, maybe a large cap growth fund, the S&P gains 10% and you gain 11%, the alpha in your fund is that one percentage point. What smart beta is, and part of the problem is that a lot of, you know, there's the whole industry has come up with so many different names for it that it just further confuses things, but it's really not that much more complicated than taking any kind of an index and building or managing that index in a slightly different way. The S&P 500, for example, is what they call a market cap weighted index, which means that the largest stocks in that 500 stock index will get the most assets or a disproportionate amount of assets, money, when money comes into the index, if it's, you know, and it will grow that way. So if you buy the S&P 500 or a comparable index, an index giving you exposure to the S&P 500, the largest stocks in that index are going to be most weighted in that index. The smaller companies are going to have a smaller weighting in the index. Well, what smart beta tries to do or does is they might take the same 500 stocks, and they'll just say, we're going to equal weight them.
Okay.
We're going to say, instead of giving Microsoft the biggest, Apple the biggest weighting in that index, we're going to give all 500 stocks an equal share. We're going to divide it evenly, and we'll see what kind of performance you get out of that. One example is there's the NASDAQ 100. The NASDAQ 100 index has been equal weighted by a company, First Trust. So there's a ticker is QQEW, and it's an equal weighted index. The Dow Jones Industrial Average, there's 30 stocks in the Dow Jones Industrial Average, and instead of that being market cap weighted, that is weighted based on stock price. So, and that sounds like kind of a screwy thing, but it's no more screwy than market cap weighted. Let's say there are two stocks, really simplify it. There's an index with two stocks in it. If one stock is worth $10 and the other one is worth $5, the $10 stock will have double the weight in the index as the $5 stock. So that's how the Dow Jones Industrial Average is weighted. So what smart beta proponents and fans are all about is they're trying to basically get something beyond just market beta.
And okay.
Market cap weighting is the strictest definition of market beta. So smart beta is actually sort of a hybrid between traditional market cap weighted indexes like the S&P 500 and actively managed strategies by, you know, somebody trying to, but smart beta are also, they're quantitatively driven, meaning they're driven by strict formulas. Nobody's going to run an equal weighted index, you know, where every stock has the same amount of exposure in the index, and then one day say, hey, you know what, I really feel good about this particular stock. Let's double up on that one.
Right, right.
That's
right.
Not going to happen. There's right. None of that human element and their hunch and all that other stuff in there. So, I mean, it's a big and growing category, but it's really hard to get your head around or get your arms around, really. Morningstar categorizes that as a little over $400 billion in total of 479 exchange-traded products.
Wow. That's a lot.
And it's, let me see if I have, but that's up from, I guess, $195 billion at
okay.
the end of 2012. So it's more than double. The problem is, even though Morningstar has tracked them and is categorizing them, there's no universe. You can't go on Morningstar.com and say, show me all the smart beta products.
Right.
Well, first of all, Morningstar calls them strategic beta, so that makes it
of course
more
they do.
Challenging. Some of these strategies are called alternative beta, fundamental indexing, enhanced indexing. The industry is not really helping itself, the asset management industry, by not even coming together on the same page with identifying these things, because many of them have a lot to offer. And there are some really cool things out there. There's this one, it's called Direction iBillionaire. The ticker is IBLN. And what they do is they look at the public filing of between 5 and 10 individual billionaire investors.
Mm.
And they build a portfolio based on looking at those public filings and looking at the 30 most common holdings. And then they hold those 30 most common holdings in an equal-weighted basis.
That is interesting.
So it's basically getting kind of the best investment strategies or the most common investment strategies among a small collection of really, really wealthy investors. There's another one. It's called Direction All Cap Insider Sentiment. And the ticker there is KNOW. And what that one does is it screens the stocks making up the S&P 1500 index. And it looks for secondary market buying by corporate insiders. So corporate insiders meaning executive level executive level officers at corporations, and because they have to file their insider buying and selling activity, and that some people confuse that, you know, insider trading. That's not what we're talking about here. That's
right,
illegal.
Right.
Insider buying and selling is just if you're a chief financial officer, for example, at a big public company, you have to disclose your volume is buying and selling activity. So when there's a lot of buying, that's usually considered a bullish sign for that particular company, because these people would know better than anyone else whether or not this is a good time to buy that stock. So what
yeah.
this particular fund does, KNOW, is track that activity. So,
that's clever.
Yep.
I like that. Some of these, I'm going to grab a quick break, Jeff. We'll come back. I want to dig a little deeper into some of it with the smart beta. Jeff Benjamin, ladies and gentlemen, senior columnist, Investment News. Quick break. Word from our sponsor. Stay right there.
Since 1997, David Holland has built a solid reputation in our local community as an independent financial advisor. Just as important, Holland Financial's professional team has grown to include 3 experienced certified financial planners, a tax accountant, an attorney, 3 chartered financial consultants, accredited asset management specialist, and certified annuity specialist. Our attentive and professional staff gives prompt and accurate service to our 300-plus clients. If you're looking for financial advice you can count on today and for many years to come, call Holland Financial at 671-PLAN or visit us online at planstronger.com. Do you have financial questions you'd like answered on this show? Send them to questions@planstronger.com. You will remain anonymous.
Welcome back. Jeff Benjamin on the line with me, and we're digging into some of it's a little technical, but we'll unwind it for you. Investmentnews.com, of course, for a lot of good information, and Jeff's a senior columnist over there. So just back for a minute on the smart beta, Jeff. I wanted to circle back around to, again, to some of the fundamental part of that, and then we can dig a little deeper if you'd like. This isn't really... like you said, somebody trying to, a fund manager or a company trying to say, hey, we're going to overweight here because we think this area is going to grow more or less. Because that's really alpha. That's what alpha's all about. Uh-huh. And that stock selection and what they do based on research or whatever. With smart beta, it's an attempt to basically enhance the index by, you know, like you said, using dollar weighted versus market weighted or price weighted. There's these different ways of doing it. And so it's a... The word smart, I think, does imply that there is this thoughtfulness about the pick. So I think that that's where some of the terminology kind of gets tricky and gets confusing with you know, the manager's intervention on individual selection, as opposed to more of that kind of setting it up to where basically it's the index is set in a way that it's going to give you a certain type of risk profile.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, it's definitely an evolution. You know, the thing that I kind of reflect on when I hear all these new things coming out is maybe this is a little naivete, but don't we have enough strategies already? I mean, it seems like it always is getting more complicated.
Yeah, you could certainly argue that we have enough strategies already. And, you know, let's face it, the asset management industry, they're in the business to make money.
Yeah.
By selling things that investors will want to buy,
right?
And you know, I got to tell you, I'm a fan of smart beta. I'm a fan of the strategies. I'm, you know, certainly not all of them. There's some things out there that are a little bit loopy, and there's some things out there that I think are more, you know, more, what do they say, more sizzle than steak or something like that.
Yeah.
But you know, I like some of these ideas. I've never been a big fan of market cap weighting. You're basically buying the most expensive, you know, you're buying at the top throughout. And if you want to buy the S&P 500 index through a mutual fund company or something like that, you're basically just putting money into the most expensive, parts of that index and making it more expensive. The good thing is that other people are doing it too. So you basically get, you know, you get a return. But, you know, I like the idea of mixing it up a little bit. It's, you know, these smart beta funds, like just like index funds or passive index funds, are, you know, they're relatively inexpensive, they're transparent, you know what's in there, and they're liquid. You know, you can trade them throughout the day, or you can, you know, there are some that are wrapped inside mutual funds which you trade, you could buy and sell at the end of every day. But I think they have a lot to offer, especially in areas where, you know, you might want to be exposed to large cap stocks, for example, but you're not a big fan of market cap weighting, or maybe you feel like you want large cap stock exposure, but market cap weighting is not the only way to get it. So as opposed to paying for an actively managed mutual fund in the large cap space, where it could be argued that, you know, you're paying for active management in one of the most efficient parts of the global markets, it's pretty hard to generate any alpha at the active management level for large cap growth. But you still want some large cap, so maybe get something that gives you a different way to capture that same market.
Yeah.
So, like I said, it's hard to throw a blanket over them because they're all over the place.
Right.
You can't even get them in the same place. But,
right. You
know, if you do some digging, you look at some, you might find some that you like. And to me, it's a different way to kind of get some inexpensive index exposure.
Yeah, I think that's a good point, Jeff, because I know from what we do, we like to index some of that large cap. But then we do look for ways to have some things that'll be a little different and give us a little different take on it and not be all 100%, lockstep with the S&P.
Mm-hmm.
And I think some of these you gave as examples earlier are kind of interesting with the iBillionaire Index and then the All Cap Insider Sentiment, the NO, which is what a clever mm-hmm. ticker they've got.
Yeah.
And these are just a couple of examples, and this is just different ways of slicing and dicing these indexes and giving you a different way of, again, when you're looking for diversification and an investor is looking to build a portfolio, you don't want all these things to move in lockstep. You want to have these things, act as much makes sense, move independently so that everything doesn't go the same direction, because the risk, we don't mind it all going the same direction up, but it's when mm-hmm. it's going down, we don't.
Right. Well, yeah, I mean, it's all about correlation. And
right.
If you want things that are, to me, the way I invest is for lack of correlation across my portfolio. And, you can handle more volatility when things are not correlated. And to me, I look at volatility. I know there's volatility scares people because it usually represents volatility going both ways. But trying to be as optimistic as possible, I look at volatility as upside potential.
Sure.
Well, I offset some of that. Risk in the volatility by having assets invested in non-correlated strategies.
Mm.
And, if you can get the S&P 500 in the traditional market cap weighted way and the S&P 500 in some other smart beta variation, you've got, basically exposure to the same thing with a little bit less correlation. So that can't be a bad thing.
No. I like that. I like that a lot. Actually, that was a very well way of putting it. That you are exposing yourself to some of the same companies and names, but in a little bit different
mm-hmm.
approach and a strategy, and give you a little different flavor. And it's like another example is with the Dow, and maybe picking the more of the dividend of the Dow, or
right.
looking at some sort of slicing up the S&P 500, looking for the highest dividend players, and building an index on that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. It's good stuff. It's interesting stuff too. Well, I'm going to definitely take good stock of what you're doing here, Jeff. I like it. I think it's smart. It's not just smart beta, it's smart writing. Thank you for that, Jeff.
Well, thank you.
All right, Jeff Benjamin, ladies and gentlemen, senior columnist, Investment News, and lots of great resources over there at investmentnews.com, columns and blogs and great articles like Jeff has written, and we're always happy to have him back. And Jeff, come back. We'll set up another time, okay?
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you much.
All right, bye.
Today's edition of Real Money Radio has been brought to you by Holland Financial, conveniently located on Granada Boulevard in Ormond Beach. Could you benefit from a one-on-one confidential conversation with David Holland, or would you like a second opinion to make sure that you're on the right track? Call Holland Financial at 671-PLAN or visit us at planstronger.com to schedule your no-obligation consultation. David looks forward to discussing the financial issues that matter most to you. The host of Real Money Radio, David Holland, is a certified financial planner with over 20 years of experience. And because David provides advice to clients on a daily basis, his hyperactive compliance department wants us to tell you that David Holland is an investment advisor representative of Holland Advisory Services, a registered investment advisory firm. He offers insurance and annuity products through Holland Insurance Services. Commentary given during this radio program should not be considered investment, insurance, tax, or legal advice. Views expressed concerning specific securities are not an offer to buy or sell. Investment advice and planning services can only be given after an analysis of an individual situation and only where Holland Advisory Services is registered or exempt from registering. Real Money Radio is produced by Holland Productions.